All right, welcome to a special midweek episode of the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. I'm here with Shane. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good. We were supposed to record yesterday, but I fell asleep because work is killing me. Well, we're here now. So there we go.
Happens to the best of us.
Honestly, it does, because it's life and we get tired. What else do you expect? All right, so mostly it's going to be more of a news and notes day just because it's, you know, a midweek show. We didn't have, like, a big one last week. We'll talk about some of the games last week. We'll kind of preview some for this weekend. Obviously, there's not really a need to do, like, a game of the week or a pot cookies or anything like that because a lot of the games do matter, even if they are pot cookies this week. So it doesn't really make sense to do it. So that will be that for us today. Mostly, and then maybe just some other stuff for the post-credit scene. But I want to start with the Chicago Bears, Shane, because they're in an interesting spot, right? Like, a lot of people are questioning, like, is Justin Fields their future? You know, can they trade him for some good value? They have the number one pick. They can afford to trade that again this year, thanks to the idiotic trade of the Carolina Panthers. For that, you know, that number one selection that they have. What do you think Chicago is going to do? And not just Chicago and GM Ryan Pace. What would you do if you're Justin Fields? Would you ask out? Or, because, I mean, he's in a unique position where he's close to a contract year. He has a lot of leverage where he can ask out and potentially, you know, go somewhere else with a new coach or something like that. Well, how do you feel about their whole kind of interesting but weirdly good situation going into the offseason?
I mean, I don't know if he really does have that much leverage, if he, like, in terms of where he could go as a starter. Because I feel like, you know, regardless of, I mean, if he wants to go into next season, or just the future in general, without the expectation of being a starter, then I feel like he'd have a big market. But the way it is now, that's probably not where he is, and I get that. Yeah, he's not the guy for Chicago. I'm sorry, but he just isn't.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I know two teams where I think he is the guy for him. I'm going to give you two teams.
Yeah.
Seattle and Atlanta.
Seattle, no. Not even close.
What?
Atlanta, yes.
Why not? Okay, Seattle with no Pete Carroll and an offensive-minded head coach. How do you say no? If Pete Carroll
you have to throw that caveat in there.
I'll throw it for Atlanta too. Do you want Justin Fields with Arthur Smith, who doesn't know how to throw the ball to his primary targets?
Desmond Ridder.
I mean. But part of the reason I think Desmond Ridder was bad is because Arthur Smith doesn't know what to do with his offensive playbook. And I think Justin Fields would be worse.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I think, you know, they have kind of that, like, weird pistol spread offense that, you know, like, it works well with a guy like Justin Fields. Or, you know, that's why, like, I think Taylor Heineke's a little bit better for them, even though he's not great. I mean, the first thing is they need to get rid of Arthur Smith, but, but, you know, aside from that, just looking at the quarterback situation, I do think Justin Fields, you know, even though he's not that much better, he's at least a more natural athlete and runner than those guys are, which is something that I think would benefit Atlanta. But, you know, Seattle is interesting for him. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, it would have to, for one, it would really depend on your coach, whoever it ended up being. And I think, you know, considering all the weapons Seattle has, which they're, I mean, they don't have any like A plus weapons, but they've got pretty good guys. I mean, Metcalf, Lockett, JSN, Walker, like they're solid. That obviously makes a quarterback's job a little easier, but I feel like when you have all those guys, you need somebody who's, you know, a much more efficient passer and is somebody who's going to make it a priority to get them the ball as opposed to, you know, a guy who just decides to go through his progressions and is like, yeah, I'm just going to run, you know, which works a little better for like an Atlanta or a, or like Philly. I mean, obviously he wouldn't go there because Jalen Hurts, but something like that. I think, I'll throw them in there. I think, the Raiders would also be an interesting fit for him.
Really? Personally. What?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, because especially if they keep, Antonio Pierce.
Which they must at all costs.
I would agree.
If they fire, I'm going to be real, just really quick. If they fire Antonio Pierce on Monday, not only will I lose my mind, if I'm any other NFL team, if I'm Seattle, if I'm Atlanta, if I'm any other team who fires their head coach, I'm calling them up immediately. Immediately. Without any question.
Well, and, you know, like Max Crosby will probably show up at Mark Davis' house with pitchforks and torches. yeah. But I don't think, yeah, I feel like they're going to be, I feel like they're more interested in Caleb at one and the Bears, that is. And for the love of God, please get rid of Matt Eberflus.
Yes, he's not good.
When you watch the Bears, I notice that, I mean, yes, Justin Fields struggles, but I will, you know.
I don't think it's his fault. I don't think it's his fault.
Well, I mean, I think part of the blame goes to him, yes. But I think it's more of a case of, you know, like he himself is not that great for the NFL, but the system he's in is also not doing him any favors because you watch it and they're just very, the offense is not creative at all.
It's so one-dimensional. It's insane.
And even when there's, I mean, you can see it. There's guys that will be wide open down the field and he doesn't even see it. He just runs or throws a check down or something. It's I think it's both.
But the thing is, the way I feel, and sorry to interrupt, but the way I feel with Justin Fields is I think that in this offense that Matt Eberflus has him running, he has no affinity to look down the field. I just think that part of it is that he's so panicky. And the reason why he's panicky is I don't think he's been coached very well on how to play quarterback in the NFL. I feel like if you have a fundamental offensive coach with him, he's a much different quarterback.
Right.
And that's where I feel like if they keep Eberflus and keep Fields, it's just going to get uglier and uglier and uglier. And that's why if I'm Justin Fields, look, I go to an Atlanta, right? Let's say Atlanta. I ball out. I'm getting a contract. I'm getting an actual contract. And that's part of my thinking here. It's like, bro, if he goes to Atlanta, probably not with Arthur Smith, but with somebody else, an offensive-minded guy, like, bro, like Brian Johnson in Detroit, maybe. Like, yeah, that'd be insane. Like, I think it would be insane. I think he'd actually get a proper contract, which I think if I was his agent, that would be my focus.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know, considering his athletic upside, he's definitely somebody that you would have to at least consider, you know? Because we've seen what guys like that can do in the league, like Lamar and Kyler Murray when he's healthy, right? It's pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think he is playing well, like at an NFL level, just based off what I've seen. But like you said, I also don't think the coaching and the development is doing him any favors. Which, you know, I mean, we've seen that before where, you know, a guy goes to a less than ideal situation and then gets a second chance with another team, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, look at that. You know, like, for instance, Geno Smith, I mean, you know, I think people forget just how awful he was at the Jets.
No, he was atrocious.
And, but, you know, New York Jets, that's a quarterback graveyard. And then he comes to Seattle, which, for having a defensive coach, they have a pretty good track record for developing quarterbacks, like in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. And all of a sudden, he's not amazing, but he, you know, he's a serviceable starter, right? So, yeah, I mean, you know, depending on that being said, maybe Seattle in that case would be good, or, you know, something like Atlanta, I think would suit him pretty well.
You know what I like in Justin Fields too, to be honest, and I've been up and down with him, but in the offseason, I'm like, he has a lot of athletic ability to help a roster. What I'm like with him is kind of like Josh Allen, where it's like, it's a different leap, obviously, because they have a different skill set. But I'm like,
yeah,
this guy has an opportunity to make, maybe not close to a Josh Allen leap, but something there, something in that realm. But to me, it matters who's around him in the coaching staff. And Matt Eberflus is not that person. That offensive staff is not those people at all. And I just, that's kind of what I feel about it. But then you have DJ Moore and all these guys being like, yo, he needs to be here. It's like, okay, he needs to be here, but he still needs to develop guys. Like, you can't expect him to start and win you three games. And that's part of it where I feel like, yeah, the idea of trading the number one pick for something at the back end, or, you know, what they did last year, trading like 5 or 6 or 7, as tantalizing as that is, I think it's more approachable for the Bears to just say, look, we have the selection, we have our own selection, we have a quarterback that we don't trust, we can maybe do a Caleb Williams, although to be honest, I'm not that high on him anymore. I don't know how you feel about Caleb, but we'll get to him in a second.
No. Bust.
I'm starting to feel that way too. But also, regardless of Caleb or whoever it would be, there has to be some thought of like, bro, maybe it's time to just make a change, get a different QB in there, and maybe for Fields it's better for him. I just think it's better for both sides to get rid of him. That's kind of where I'm at. Now, with Caleb, he's not number one on my board anymore. Is he number one on your board right now?
He never was, but
I don't think he ever was for you. He was at the beginning of the year, and I'm like, okay, you have Penix here, you have Daniels, you have guys who actually performed really well in college, and also part of it with Caleb too is, and that's part of my thing with this class as well, this class has a lot of age at the QB position, and that's somewhat concerning about this class, but that being said, experience can be helpful.
I don't really care.
Really, you don't? Why not?
Ooh. They're 1 or 2 years older than the normal age of guys drafted. Who cares? Like,
what?
They're still fine. They're still going to have 6-7 years before they turn 30. It's like,
it's not a big deal. But to me, here's why it's a big deal, Shane. It's the contract. It's the money. Because you're paying this guy 5 years of that contract. He's hitting 30. Like, he's hitting 30 and you're going to pay him approximately 60 mil a year, 70 mil? But they're not young. Like, it does concern me for the idea of, oh, if I have to pay him after the fifth year option, it's going to be a boatload of money. And the guy's going to be in his prime.
Extend them after the third year.
I guess. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, it depends. That is true. It depends on how the extensions will work or whatever. But that is my ultimate concern. But again, if you get a superstar, it kind of offsets itself, right? If you get a superstar, you're going to pay him regardless. So other than that, though, did Caleb go lower on your board this year after watching this college football season, or is he kind of just staying right where he's at?
Yeah, he's gone a little lower. I mean, I don't know. It's, to me, you know, a lot of people have been saying that he looks like the next Mahomes. And I was like, wow, he must be pretty good then. And so I started watching him last year and with that thought in mind, and you know, I'm seeing him make all these, you know, running around in the pocket, Houdini throws, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah, that's cool. But then I was watching more, and I was like, you know, this guy really, it's kind of the Justin Fields issue where, you know, there'll be a guy wide open for a throw, and he just, like, doesn't see him. He's instead running around like, oh yeah, let me be fancy. And yeah. And then it's like, I mean, there's that, but also, you know, then he has these moments where, you know, he'll just throw deep to, you know, a guy who's in double coverage and it's like just not even there. And it's like, what are you doing that for? Like, just to show off your arm strength? I mean, and yeah, you know, it's just a lot of stuff like that. And to me, I guess it just felt like I just got the impression. Oh, and that's not even mentioning the whole thing about, oh, I need to be a part owner of whatever team drafts me. Like, dude, shut up.
I mean, I don't know what's the update on that, but I feel like he wants to really, like, whatever team drafts him, he wants to, like, really have a say in the organization. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's not how that works.
But like, yeah.
It just seems like a bizarre attitude, to say the least. Yeah, I'm just not, these are just all like, it feels like, basically, it feels like he's more concerned about looking flashy than he is with, you know, just actually being a good quarterback.
Yeah, that's fair. I also felt this year that he just fell down. I wasn't that impressed with him this year as I was last year. And yeah. I look at guys like Penix who are leading guys to the playoff, and we'll get to the playoff a bit later. And, you know, and Bo Nix, I'm like, yeah, these guys are real NFL quality quarterbacks who have been in the college system for a while. And maybe that's the new trend. Who knows? Guys who stay in the college system pretty long and find their, belong in the tooth, I guess, and find their way, but who knows? But yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, we'll have to see what his pro day looks like. We'll have to see what his combine looks like, but I'm kind of with you there. Like, and maybe the Bears are there too, and they'd be like, okay, we're still going to trade the number one pick to a team who we know is probably going to go with Caleb, and maybe that opens it up too. So there's options as well there if they're not super interested in Caleb. The Jets and Dalvin Cook mutually parted ways this week, and Dalvin Cook had some interest, obviously, and then ended up signing with the Baltimore Ravens. Look, the Ravens right now, for me, I'm buying all the Ravens stock after last week. I think they're the best team in football. I don't think Lamar should win the MVP. I think they're the best team in football, clearly, at this point. But aside from that, people are freaking out about them signing Dalvin Cook. They just need running back depth. It's just running back depth. It's fine. Like, why are people going nuts? Like he's not going to take over the RB1 there. He's just there to give them RB depth, which they desperately need for how many damn injuries they've had over the years. At a crucial time getting to the playoffs here. Why are people freaking out thinking he's, like, still his 1,000-yard rusher self? He's not that anymore. But that's fine.
No.
They're not signing him for that.
Well, and I'm pretty sure it just said he signed there for the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it is for the playoffs. It's a playoff contract, yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, even then, it's like, he is, you know, he's had, the Ravens have, what have they lost, their top two backs?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, you know, I feel like Gus Edwards will be, like, in the playoffs, he'll kind of be the one, and then Dalvin Cook, he'll be like the two, maybe like a third down back, you know.
Maybe Mitchell comes back and he's a scat back kind of player who comes in certain packages.
Right.
Like, they desperately need a guy like Dalvin Cook just to help move the chains. And that's it. That's all he's going to do. And that's a good thing. This is a team that needs all the help they can get, because even if they've been the best team of the regular season, which they have been at points, not only this year, but in previous years, the playoffs are a different animal for the Baltimore Ravens, as it will be for a lot of teams this year. I think get all the help you can get, and he's perfect for that.
Well, not to mention, no Mark Andrews.
Who might be back if they get to the Super Bowl. Right? Like, so there's that too, right? So.
And I think Ronnie Stanley still out?
I think he might be, yeah. I have to look at the practice reports.
I mean, that's big. Because he's probably a top three left tackle in the game, I would say.
Yeah.
It's especially when you get to this time of year, it's like, yeah, if you can pad out the roster like that, it's going to help a lot, especially because, you know, you look at the rest of the AFC, I mean, Bills are getting hot. They got the other cook up there, Dalvin, who's doing really well as of late.
James, You said Dalvin.
Oh, yeah, James. You know what, though? Have you seen the thing about their first and middle names?
What?
The Cook brothers?
Oh,
so Dalvin's middle name is James, and then James' middle name is Dalvin.
Oh, heavens. Okay.
So they're James Dalvin Cook and Dalvin James Cook.
God dang it. But on top of that, too, speaking of kind of where the AFC is, we have Bills Dolphins for the AFC East title, and the Bills basically need to win to get in, and the Dolphins are getting cooler and cooler here because their defense isn't kind of where they need to be. This is a perfect opportunity for the Bills not only to get hot, but be like, oh yeah, we have the 2 seed. Oh yeah, we're a top team in the AFC. Like, this is an opportunity where they're getting hot at the right time. And again, it hasn't been perfect, but I don't think either of these teams have been perfect either, so it's going to be a really interesting matchup. But I also have a feeling that the Bills offense is going to have to find a way to keep up with this Dolphins offense. Right? Both of these offenses are going to be big keys for this game. How do you feel about how it could play out, though?
Yeah, I definitely, I like Buffalo here. Comparing these two teams, especially like at this point in the season when, you know, the injuries are, are stacking up and, you know, Miami, that's a type of offense that is great for the first couple of months, but then, you know, it's so is so reliant on the deep pass and the quick routes and the, you know, that once you get into this time of year, it doesn't work as well. I mean, it still does, but it's not like it was. And you know, I think offensively, Buffalo's really started to find an identity with, you know, having Josh Allen not necessarily being a savior, just, you know, just throwing a lot to Diggs, running if he needs to, and then having a consistent run game with Cook. You know, all these things combined, it's really helping them a lot. And I just feel like it's going to be too much for Miami's defense to keep up with. And, you know, on the other side, I mean, Miami, that's also a good offense. But, you know, their Buffalo's defense, they've, you know, they've also had their fair share of injuries. But I think on the secondary, they're pretty solid. Well, both these teams are on the secondary, but in any case, you know, I feel like if there's any team that's going to be able to sort of limit what they're doing, what Miami's doing, it would be these guys, because, they really have the right guys in all units of the defense, you know? So, it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be a good game, but I think it's, I just don't see Miami being able to, pull it off. But you never know with Buffalo, even if they're the favorite, they always seem to sneak in a game here and there where you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah, Buffalo to me always has those games, and that's what kind of weirds me out about this matchup. Speaking of Week 18 being weird, we have Blaine Gabbert starting for the Chiefs. We have, let's think about this. We have Blaine Gabbert starting for the Chiefs. We have Carson Wentz starting for the Rams this week. There's more weird ones.
Darnold for the Niners.
Sam Darnold starting for the Niners. This is, so we're in our Pick'em League. Well, I'm still battling to try to win our Pick'em League. And I'll be honest, I'm just kind of picking favorites and letting it go, because I'm going to be honest here, I don't know what to do with half of the teams with backup QBs this week in our Pick'em League. Because it's like, what do you, like, people are just kind of, as you do in a Pick'em League, kind of blindly pick the favorite anyway. But this week especially, I'm like, how much do I need to factor in the quarterbacks? Does it really matter? A lot of these teams don't have a lot to play for necessarily. Some do, obviously, some don't. The ones that do obviously have bigger, you know, primetime slots or whatever. It's weird, man. Like, like playing fantasy in week 18 again, which is asinine. We did it 1 year. I'm never doing it again. Thanks ESPN for making that your standard default setting. Why is that your standard default? Anyway.
It's kind of dumb.
It's unbelievable. But it's like, I don't know, like, and that's part of week 18 too. It's like, for so much, I think for us especially, we're just waiting for Sunday night football to end. And we come on here and be like, okay, what are the playoff matchups? What are we diving into, right? And then a team that we're going to dive into a lot on Sunday, which I think importantly speaking, we're going to dive into, is the Cleveland Browns. And the Browns is a team I feel like we haven't talked a lot about as Super Bowl favorites, but a lot of people in Vegas are betting for them. They're really, obviously their defense is great. Joe Flacco's playing out of his mind. One of the things that on the Rich Eisen show, I think they were talking about this week, and it kind of made me think more about this roster and this team. The turnover issues on offense with Flacco are going to be a concern in the playoffs. And I think that was a really interesting thought, because I've also haven't felt as confident about this offense as I do their defense. So I haven't really put them high on my Super Bowl contender list. Have you put them high on your list? And if not, why not for the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I think for me, they're like my third favorite in the AFC. So, not super high, but, you know, they're up there, I guess. yeah, I think, you know, the thing for me is, even though offensively they have been doing great, not all of it has been against amazing defenses. So I feel like they're gonna, it kind of feels like the 2016 Broncos to me, where they're gonna have to be sort of not carried by the defense, but like gonna be a little more relied on. And, especially because their offense, I mean, they're missing a couple linemen. They're missing Chubb. And, you know, like Flacco, yes, he's been great, but like you said, there's the turnover problem that you have to think about. So yeah, I feel like, you know, I would not be surprised if they made a deep run. But, you know, if you have to get in a shootout with them or, you know, just a high scoring offensive game, I don't know. I feel like they would struggle.
Like, they don't beat the Dolphins tomorrow. In fact, I think they get smacked by them. Like, I don't think they beat the Dolphins. I don't think they beat the Ravens.
I think they beat the Dolphins.
Do you think they beat the Dolphins? Do you think their offense can actually keep up with what Miami does?
Well, I mean, no, but defensively,
I don't think the Browns can put up like 30 points though, or 20 points against the Dolphins.
Why not? I mean, the Browns' offense is better than Miami's defense.
Right. You're right.
Defense is better than Miami's offense.
Do they beat the Chiefs right now?
Yeah.
I think the Browns easily beat the Chiefs right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a tougher defense for sure. But Browns' defense is a little better, I think. And, you know, the Chiefs can't complete a pass this season. So, you know, that'll make things easier. If the Browns and Chiefs played tomorrow, even if it's in Kansas City, which if they played in the playoffs, it would be in Kansas City. If they played, I feel like it'd probably be like, you know, 17-7 Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like a low score, but Cleveland is definitely in control, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
To be generally honest, I continue to hate watching the Chiefs.
It's abysmal.
I can't watch them, dude. They're like one of the few teams I just can't. Like, I do it because they're interesting, but I'm also like, oh. And then a receiver drops a ball and I'm like, oh.
It's frustrating because defense is great. O-line's great. Obviously, Mahomes is fantastic, but then it's like, it's cool because they have all these great pieces. Everything's going well for them, and then they just cannot catch the damn ball. It's so frustrating. It's like, oh my God.
I'm honestly going to let Brandon deal with his Eagles, because I'm already done with them after that Cardinals lost. I don't even know what to say. Then maybe we need to consider Sirianni's future. Anything you'd like to add there? Because I don't have anything. I definitely would, I think, at this point.
He's a walk-around guy. Get him out of here.
I'm kind of there with that. Seattle, you need the Bears to win. I think that's your season. A lot to think about.
Even if they make it, I'm pretty sure they're not winning the first round. But
yeah.
Other than that,
I kind of want to save the NFC for Sunday. Just kind of see where it kind of ends up. Same with the AFC. I do want to add in a Chargers topic today. Finally talking about the Chargers for one thing. Jim Harbaugh, Chargers head coach. What does that sound to you?
From a Chargers fan? Sounds pretty great.
Do you like it? Do you think it works? If that is, because that's what we're hearing, right? Could be some mutual interest there, maybe. I'm fairly confident he stays at Michigan at this point. Even if he loses on Monday, I don't see it. But if you do hear that, like if we get breaking news, Jim Harbaugh's the new head coach of the Chargers, how do you think he works with Herbert? How do you think he works with this roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes pretty well if that happens. If you look at his track record, everywhere he's gone, he went to a team that was, below average in most cases. And in no time, turned him into a powerhouse. And, he did that at Stanford, San Francisco, Michigan. And, most of that was with guys like Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick.
And J.J. McCarthy this year, who I don't think either of us think is that good.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine, but, I don't see him as an NFL prospect necessarily.
I see him as a backup, that's all. I see him as a serviceable backup.
Yeah. No, yeah, he'll make the league, just not like a starter. But Herbert is probably the most talented quarterback he will have ever had. I don't know who else it would be. Maybe Andrew Luck at Stanford, but that was college, so a little different, obviously.
Because here's the thing, too, why I love this, for Harbaugh especially, he's never had a roster that's Super Bowl ready year one.
Right. Yeah.
But this is a Super Bowl ready roster the moment he signs on the dotted line and has the press conference.
Yeah,
it's Super Bowl ready right now. It's Super Bowl ready right now and they have 5 wins.
Yeah, I mean his first year in San Francisco, the season before, I can't remember what their record was, but they were bad and the roster was not great. His first season there, they won 11 games. And I think either went to the divisional round or the NFC championship. Dude doesn't waste any time. So,
but this is an actual Super Bowl ready roster and he comes in and says, okay, here we go. Here we go. No recruiting. Maybe pick up some free agents here that want to come here and then we're good. We're good to go. Let's get to training camp. Let's get to week one.
There, that would definitely, I would think, be sort of a free agent draw,
Oh, for sure.
So.
Not that they have a ton of money to work with, but some to get some good veterans in. Why not?
Yeah, but, the thing is too, they have, yes, they do have good pieces on their roster, but when you think about it, they're in the most important positions, like quarterback, receiver. Yeah, he's getting older, but he's still good. Yeah. you know, they've got a
Keenan Allen. Yeah, Keenan Allen's older, but they're getting younger receivers year after year. O line is getting older, but it's
and
good.
Allen's still good.
Yeah, he's still very good. He's very
and oh,
good.
By the way, you've got a guy named Joey Bosa on your defensive line,
and Khalil Mack if he resigns. I think I think he might actually be on a 2-year deal. I think he's back there next year regardless. Yikes. Yikes, that's very scary. Again, why did the team have 5 wins this year? Gross.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, my dog could have been the coach and they would have won more games.
oh my god.
So yeah. It's no, I like it a lot. And he's also, I think he really instills a good work ethic. Not that they need that, but I mean, I think
the Chargers need that. I think they need that.
Yeah. I mean, let me rephrase that. I'm not trying to say that they're like lazy or whatever, but the reason I say that is because
they hated their head coach. What do you think?
Right. They kind of need someone to just like be like, okay, regroup. Here's what we're doing. You know, and then go.
Yeah. Like they hated their head coach. If you don't like your head coach, are you going to play hard for him? Hell no. Hell no. Yeah.
I know from experience. and yeah, so anyways, but yeah, no, I like it a lot. I've seen rumors about Belichick too. I'm like, please, no, don't do that. That's not, he can be good
know.
Elsewhere, but in LA, no, that's not working. I think if they could get Harbaugh, I think that would definitely be the move. But we'll see.
Speaking of Harbaugh, let's we can start with this CFP before we do some Pro Bowl stuff. I thought the games over the weekend were terrible. I thought they were really bad. And I know that the fourth quarter was fun and all those games, but I said this to Brandon on the phone while we were watching some of the games. I'm like, this is the worst 4 teams we've ever had in the college football playoff. These 4 teams are not good. Or they all have one really discernible weakness that I can't wrap my mind around. And we'll just start with the 2 teams that made the CFP final. Washington has probably one of the worst defenses you'll ever see. So did Texas. And on top of that, Michigan has one of the worst offenses I've ever seen on a college football stage. And these are your 2 that you're playing in the final. And then Alabama, for what it's worth, I think they should have made it in. I think we all, from what I remember, didn't have a problem with the fact that they made it in. But the reality of the matter is Melrose is a solid college quarterback and a backup. So is J.J. McCarthy. He's an NFL backup. Melrose is the same. And then Texas has just, that defense was horrible. And so that's part of my problem with this championship game, Shane. It's like, number one, I don't think these 4 teams were really that good for most of the year anyway. But I mean, what I mean by that is they had certain real, real issues. Like, normally we get to a CFP and we're like, oh, Clemson, they're pretty great top to bottom. Oh, Alabama, pretty good top to bottom. Like, this is an offense in Michigan that is atrocious against a defense in Washington that is atrocious. And for as much as people nationally might look at this game and go, and we kind of did too when it came to Washington against Texas, until I kind of sat back and thought about it a little bit more, there's people that are going to sit here and go, okay, Washington, final year in the Pac-12, you know, Pac-12 football is whatever, which I kind of agree with. And so Michigan should steamroll them. Shane, Michigan's not going to steamroll them. This is going to be close and tight, potentially weirdly more defensive focused, and this is a game that seriously Washington can win. Without a doubt, in my opinion. This is a game they can actually win. And yet, I still sit here and say, I don't even know who to pick, because I am profusely confused about what to do with this game.
I can definitely see either team winning it, which is usually not the case for the national championship. I wouldn't say that these teams are all bad. I just think that we're not, not very good or whatever you want to say, but I think they are good. It's just like you said, they all just have, a hole. And some people look at that and don't like it. I love it personally because this is what happens or what is happening now as a result of, NIL, transfer portal, whatever else. There's no longer, that one team that's just way too dominant and no one can beat them. It's the competition is much more spread out now. Now we've got this year, I would argue we had, up until the Florida State lost Jordan Travis, I would argue that we had like 8 teams that could have competed for a final.
And by the way, thank God we have 12 teams going in next year. Thank the Lord we have 12 next year. Thank the Lord.
I think it keeps it way more interesting. And I think the country likes it as well because viewers and ratings are way up this year. Because this is, even though the teams this year are not as good as like some of the ones from previous years, the games were a lot closer and more exciting. Therefore, at least I thought, and I think it's terrific for the sport personally. I don't really enjoy watching, Alabama or Georgia just go into the Sugar Bowl or the Rose Bowl and destroy, TCU 63-3. Like, that's stupid. I don't care.
I'm going to say this. I think we've seen this in the NFL too, where it's like, this team has this specific weakness, and this team has this specific weakness. But most of the time, minus Miami and a few other teams, right? We have, their whole defense is ass. Like, I think we only say that for, like, Miami and, like, a couple more teams, right? And then some teams, it's like, their receivers are bad, or, their quarterback isn't very quality. My problem with these four is that there's whole units that are just awful. Like, the Michigan offensive unit is awful. The Washington offensive defensive unit is awful. Wait, you wouldn't say that for Michigan?
Michigan has a great run game.
Yeah, but they didn't use it barely.
Yeah, but they
got it, but they still were making McCarthy throw like he's an NFL quarterback. And that brings me back to my other point too, with kind of the future of college football. Do you think that having, I'll phrase it this way. If Washington wins on Monday, do you think we're going to the next 5-10 years of college football being the team that wins the national title has to have a proper quality NFL starter? You can't win with a AJ McCarron anymore. You can't win with a Jameis Winston anymore. You have to have a proper quality NFL starter the next 5-10 years.
It's tough to say because, you look at, Jameis Winston and some of these other guys, and at the time we thought, these are going to be NFL guys, NFL stars, and they just never were.
Did anyone think AJ McCarron was going to be an NFL starter when he won his championships? No.
But I mean, there's a lot more cases than just him. I mean,
right.
That's
the one that comes up in my head.
Or, you know, LSU, Clemson. I mean, you get Burrow, Lawrence. Well, I mean, not just Burrow. I mean, there's tons of NFL stars from that team.
Yeah.
And like the Alabama teams recently. But yeah, I mean, I think you could theoretically, but are you saying just in terms of quarterbacks or just a star in general?
I'm saying in terms of quarterbacks. Do you think you need like a proper this question might be not a foreseen question necessarily, because maybe in recent years I've just missed it that there are clearly, like, maybe I'm wrong and you actually do need an NFL starter to win a national title, regardless if it was BCS era or CFP, but in my lifetime, at least watching college football, I haven't always felt that way. But history might prove something different that I'm just not looking at. But I feel especially in
Stetson Bennett last 2 years.
Stetson Bennett, who is clearly just an NFL backup. Like, I mean, do you look at it and say, like, the next 5 years you have to have an NFL starter, you have to have a top prospect to win the whole thing? I'm just looking at quarterback, by the way.
I mean, I don't think so. I could see it, but, like, I think a lot of times, you know, when you look at the pros, you know, you win the Super Bowl with the best quarterback usually, right? Or not the best, but like
a top two or three
guy. One of the better ones.
A top two or three guy at the end of the year.
From that season. And, you know, and with college though, I feel like it's much more just who's got the better roster. Cause the playing field's a little more even, I feel, in college, between, you know, the different elite teams. I mean, Washington, I think, is probably the one exception to that, because they obviously they have a star quarterback and great receivers and two pretty good offensive linemen, but I mean, outside of that, they've got one defensive end that I like. One corner who's all right. Other than that, it's just dudes, like, for the most part, you know? Like,
yeah.
They really don't have these guys that are like, oh, wow, that's – yeah, these guys are good. Whereas, you know, Michigan, I mean, they've got – I could see them having
probably NFL. 10 guys make the NFL in next year's draft.
Or
maybe 12.
Or more. Yeah.
More than 12.
I mean, on offense and defense.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends, and coaching is also definitely a factor in college. You know, I think there are some guys, some college coaches who are just good recruiters, like Nick Saban. You know, Nick Saban he's a great coach.
He's not a good recruiter. He's not a good recruiter anymore. He's not good anymore. He's not a good recruiter anymore.
But
I think NIL has, as you said, ruined dynasties, which has also ruined guys like Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney. Guys that have been there.
Yeah, but it's still Nick Saban. Like, guys
Nick Saban. Yeah, people are still going to want to go.
I mean, Nick Saban, schematically, I don't think he's that great, to be honest with you.
And yeah, that's fair.
I know that's probably a hot take, but I mean, that's why he didn't work in the NFL.
It's similar to what Bill Belichick is this year.
Yeah. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, we're talking about the college football playoff. Hello.
Yeah, I know I was late tonight, but I was at work, so I am lucky to get to starting on time.
No worries. Brandon,
work? How lame.
Brandon, what do you think about my question? This is my college football question for the week. My college football question for the week is, if Penix wins on Monday night, do you believe that in the next 5-10 years, the college football playoff will be decided by who has quality NFL starters versus who doesn't? Quality future NFL starters?
I think it's already becoming a thing now. But I think if he wins, I think that's probably the case. I mean, you know, we talked about it when me and you, Rob, we were watching the Texas-Washington game, and we were like, you know, we could see that, like, basically the difference in that game was just the quarterback play at the end, because both defenses, they were terrible, but the difference was the quarterback play in that game. And that's what it takes to win big games like that. You've got to have a big game quarterback, and Penix has been that pretty much all season long. I mean, he outclassed Bo Nix, you know, to get to that point. You know, they've been one of the best teams in football all year, and that's mostly because of him. His numbers are exceptional. It's just, I think that when you have, you know, a superstar quarterback, you know, of course it's going to put you over the edge at any level, whether that's high school, college, or the pros. But I think if he wins, it's just going to set the tone. Like, you know, we thought Caleb Williams was that guy, you know, coming into this season and all, you know, all the big hype around him. And then he basically just imploded at the end of the season. And now, you know, no one's even talking about him, I think, anymore. Now everybody's talking about Penix, Nix, Drake May, you know, those guys. So, I think those guys probably, I mean, it also depends on the NFL what situation you go to. You can have a great quarterback in an awful situation. Like, look at Matt Stafford with the Lions for the first 10 years of his career. You know, like, Matt Stafford, you know, people don't give him credit. He was great there. I mean, you can say what you want about him. Yeah. Like, it's just that the rest of the team sucked. It was basically just him and Megatron. That was really it. But, you know, like, when I look at, you know, you look at guys like, I mean, who can I really describe as a great QB and a bad QB? Like, what, Justin Herbert? Justin Herbert was the guy at Oregon.
My thing is this, right? We've gone through an era of college football in our lives where we've seen AJ McCarron win a bunch of national titles. He was clearly not an NFL starter. Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, obviously, hindsight's 2020, they weren't NFL starters. Yeah. Are we in an era where it's like, okay, obviously we have seen NFL guys like Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, we've seen those guys. But like, I think if Penix wins and with NIL and everything, I'm starting to wonder, like, are you going to need like a proper NFL guy, maybe with college experience or something like that? It's a question I've had for a while, but I don't know. I'm not sure, but I think it's an interesting thought.
It's just hard because it's like you can get guys that also, you know, don't win in college as the main guy. Like, you know, you have guys who didn't get to the top of the mountain in college, like, you know, like that, but that ended up being arguably better in the pros than even were in college, like a Justin Herbert, like a Jalen Hurts,
a CJ Stroud this year.
Yeah. So it's to me, it's kind of still 50-50. I think it's trending towards, you know, the, you know, big name guys, but I think that it's still 50-50 because you got to have in the NFL is different than college football. You got to have the right system. You got to have the right, you know, pieces in place around your quarterback because your quarterback can only do so much. And like, I know Giants fans, you know, want a quarterback desperately, and they're going to need one. But they have so many other, like, worse, way worse issues on that team that they got to address, you know, like, whether that's O-line or receiver or, you know, even tight end, because Darren Waller's 95 years old, whatever the case may be. But it's like, you know, I just think it's still 50-50. I think that question is kind of just going to be something you're not really going to ever fully answer. Because, you know, you're going to have guys like Patrick Mahomes was great in college, right? But we didn't see this coming in the pros where he's becoming basically a Hall of Fame quarterback already. So, you know, it's, you know, and two rings to his name too. So, and I mean, he's got the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs with absolutely no receiving core. So, you know, it all depends kind of what situation you're in. You know, and did you at least show to me? You got to show at least flashes of talent at the college level. Like I know AJ McCarron won, but AJ McCarron was not a good quarterback. Like,
no, I didn't believe that either, and that's kind of why I'm somewhat asking this question about this.
But. So it's still tough, you know. It's still kind of it depends kind of answer. As much as that's a crappy answer, it's kind of just an it depends kind of thing.
Yeah. One thing that I'll say, kind of, maybe not it depends, but I'm getting annoyed with, is the Pro Bowl. Guys, can we stop caring about who gets in and who doesn't? This is getting dumb. Dumbass Taylor Swift fans voted Travis Kelce in the damn Pro Bowl when he probably shouldn't have gone in this year. Like, and it's not Taylor Swift fans' fault for voting. I'm not telling Taylor Swift fans you're dumb. I'm not telling that at all, because I'm a Taylor Swift fan myself. What I'm saying is, bro, like, it's a fan voting thing. And one thing I've realized too, as Brandon, you've kind of read stats throughout this show, it's like, part of things is true football guys like us can acknowledge a great season without a guy winning an award or winning a Pro Bowl or winning an All-Pro. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just about, hey, these guys have good stats and they're going to get their recognition in 10 years by their stats and their play sometimes more than just, oh, a Pro Bowl. And I think we've all agreed that All-Pro matters than the Pro Bowl, but it's like, dog, it's literally just a popularity contest. And I love how the reason why this conversation kind of stemmed with me today was like, Micah Parsons was like, why are you guys complaining about the Pro Bowl? You voted for it, goddamn. Vote for it properly then. I'm like, yeah. I didn't even vote for the Pro Bowl this year because I don't care who gets in. It's just a fun thing that we'll do on a Sunday watching guys run around and play flag football. It's whatever. Like, Brandon, do you have any thoughts on people kind of freaking out about who makes the Pro Bowl rosters and who doesn't?
I feel like people put so much stock, especially like a lot of, it feels like no matter who you are, like, unless you know the game of football, I'm not gonna say you're a casual if you don't, you know, if you care about the Pro Bowl, but like, only to me, it's gonna sound wrong, but you guys can see truth in this. Only casual fans care about who makes the Pro Bowl and who doesn't. If you're not a serious fan of it, then you'll understand that, like we just said. And we said it before numerous times on different shows. All pro matters more. And just, you know, your numbers at the end of the day.
Your numbers historically. When your career ends, what do your numbers look like?
Yeah. Like, I see people, like, and this isn't even just a Pro Bowl thing. This is just like a overall thing. There are people that I'm seeing right now when OBJ just came out and talk about, you know, the Ravens being the best team he's been on, all this stuff, and, you know, him kind of having a slight, you know, comeback of his career because he's actually looked, you know, pretty decent as a Raven. But everybody's like, oh, this guy should be a Hall of Famer. I'm like, and on what planet? OBJ is not a Hall of Famer on any planet. Like,
yeah, like, no, I'm not there with him.
They're the same people that want to put Julian Edelman in. I'm like, Julian Edelman had barely 5,000 yards receiving in his career.
Julian Edelman's different because of the postseason stuff, so there's an argument to be made. But Odell, I think there's not really an argument to be made. But yeah, back to the Pro Bowl. But I feel like this kind of brings back to your point of the Pro Bowl. It's like, bro, like, I looked at the rosters. I was like, okay, Brock Purdy's in. You got a bunch of your Eagles in. We got some, like, Julian Love is in, who I thought Julian Love had a good season. I don't think it was really a Pro Bowl year, but whatever. Like, it's fine. Like, these guys go in, they have fun for a week in Orlando, they play a flag football game, and we don't think about it anymore. So why, for like, exactly, 2 days does it matter this much?
You know what's, even worse too, is I mean, I still have a little bit of a, I get why he's in. But to me, like, I think, like, when you look at, like, the AFC quarterbacks, those are all accurate. Those are all pretty fair, I think. But when you look at the NFC, to have Matt Stafford as third, I'm like, in what world is Matt Stafford third? I'm like, he's
again,
having a decent season.
Again, it's a popularity contest.
Yeah. You know? Like, I don't care about it. I'm just kind of surprised, because I thought it was probably going to be Goff. So.
Yeah, but nobody watched the Lions this year. Minus last week.
And that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying it's a whole casual thing. If you are not in a, cause remember, look at the teams that had guys going. It was all teams that were on TV a ton this year. And it was on, and it was all guys that everybody and their mother, if you're a casual fan or not, you know who they are. Patrick Mahomes, Tua Tagovailoa, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, because the Niners are on a roll and everybody's becoming a Niners fan, you know, because it's like, you know, bandwagoning. Like all pro matters more and stats matter more. It's the same reason why I look at like Devontae Smith and nobody talks about him as being a good receiver in this league outside of me and maybe us too. We talk about it, but the casual fan doesn't even know who Devontae Smith is. And I'm like, this guy is having, was literally his rookie season was like 80 yards short of having a 1,000-yard season. Otherwise, his first three seasons, he has over 1,000 yards receiving. Like, you know, and he's a wide receiver too, mind you, not even a one. He'd be a one on half of the other teams in the league. Like, you know, what are we doing here? But, you know, it's the Pro Bowl is just one of those things that's just like, you know, let's just have fun watching it. Let's just watch the insanity that it is and just have fun with it, because who the hell cares anymore?
Yeah. Shane, your thoughts on people freaking out online about the Pro Bowl voting?
Oh, yeah, you know, it's funny because there's people are always – you ever notice on talk shows and like sports talk shows when they introduce a guest, they always say, he's a three-time Pro Bowler and no. Like it's – some, oh wow, that's so amazing.
He made a flag football game, and I'm
just sitting here going, we know, you guys know that Mitch Trubisky was a Pro Bowler, right?
The MVP.
And Tyler Huntley.
Was in it, a Pro Bowler, yeah.
Don't forget the most prestigious award that Trubisky got was the MVP.
The MVP.
Yeah, that's right.
Who Travis Kelce almost won in the Nick game, but didn't, thank God, because he didn't play well that game. Anyway. Anyway, continue, Shane. Go ahead.
No, that's all I had to say.
That's it. Perfectly said.
I mean, that's just that right there is all the reason you need to not care about this at all, you know. Just
it's my whole thing. I just look at the rosters and go, "Huh, this guy's in. Cool. This guy's in. Cool. It's gonna be good to see this guy's personality. Like, cool. All right, let's have some fun on a Sunday and do a 3-hour show ranting about these guys' seasons. Well, whatever. It's fine.
You know what I will say though. I think people still just like, you know, like other, like most people, I think still care about it on the internet and stuff like that, just because it's like, they don't promote the all pro on TV. They don't show, there's no
the
all
only,
pro.
The only place where they do that is NFL Network, where they actually show this guy won an all pro. And yes, the Pro Bowl rosters were revealed on NFL Network. I get it, but like ESPN talked about it the next day. Like,
and I think. And I just think that I think people still care about it as a whole. I mean, we don't, but I think people still care about it as a whole just because it's like a legacy thing. Like back in the day, the Pro Bowl did mean something. Because
the game actually was good. Now it's just guys run around and play flag football.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, the Pro Bowl, the only reason it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. Like, the only reason, there's a couple reasons the Pro Bowl doesn't matter, but the biggest reason why it doesn't matter is because they've watered it down. Now, it's like, it means nothing now. Like, and it's not because the fans of, us and things like that, like our opinion matter has changed. It's changed because they've watered it down. They've changed it. They've, you know, they've made more exceptions for certain players, and the criteria has changed. And it's like, what happened to the days where it was like, Sean Taylor and Brian Dawkins making Pro Bowls every year, and it's like they deserve to be there because, and they actually played the damn game hard, and it wasn't just a flag football contest.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, like, this is why Pro Bowl week is just like a whatever week for us. We're just gonna come on here and record or probably live stream us just talking crap for 3 hours and doing nothing. Just watching guys play flag football. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just fun. Who cares? Like, it's just a fun event that nobody cares about. And then next year we move on and go to next season. Cause we really, or not even that, we wait to the Super Bowl. Cause that's what we're doing. We're just waiting for the Super Bowl to kick off. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'm going to be in Hawaii during the Pro Bowl this week, so I'm probably not even going to watch it.
That's fine. Brandon, bring out all the New Jersey boys on the show. Let's have some fun.
You know, Sarish will be here. Sarish is going to be here.
For this. Oh my god, that's going to be nuts.
So I hope that I can get a few of my friends in there, because trust me, if my friends get in here and start talking about, you don't want to listen. You already got one Jersey person in here running their mouth. If you get a bunch of them, you're not going to be able, like Rob. You won't get a word in edgewise. You won't.
It's the Pro Bowl. I don't care.
True.
you're gonna hear just the wild and like you're gonna hear probably one of my friends say like, oh, look at this guy. Look at this derpy looking dude in the damn Pro Bowl. It's like okay, calm down. Take it easy.
Oh my god. Again, it's just supposed to be fun. Whatever. Let's think about something that's not as fun for you, Brandon. Do you want to go off about your Eagles? You've been holding your mouth here for a few days. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've had to be silent just because I said weeks ago that I have lost faith in this team. This is just rock bottom. Like, I mean, you lost to the 3-12 Cardinals, man, and you damn near gave up 200 yards. You gave up 200 yards rushing, and like 150 of them were James Conner. Like, come on, man. Like, listen, James Conner is not a bad running back, but my God, he's not Barry Sanders in his prime. Like, please, man. I think out of all the rushes, the rushing attempts, what do you have? Like, maybe like 15, 17, something like that. I think the only time the Eagles stopped him for a short gain or nothing or a loss, whatever it was maybe twice. The other, like, 13 runs were like 10 yards or more. Every time, it felt like. So, that's the one problem. Mind you, this was a team, by the way, and we said this, and you guys know this, they were the number one run defense in football when they were 10-1. And now, because of 5 weeks of poor defense, they've dropped, I think, from number one to, like, number 20-something?
I thought it was 12. 20? Jesus.
I think, especially after James Conner just killed them, I think it dropped even lower. I think it was at 12, but I think because he just destroyed them, it was even lower. That's not even counting the rushing that Kyler did. They had no content. Like, and I love this because they broke this down too. Like, both during the game and after. If you look at the plays, and you two heard me complain, if I can call the defense out and the offense out before the play even happens, if every fan even in the stadium watching the game, if we can see it, how come this own team can't see their mistakes week after week after week and fix it? If we can see it a mile away, Christian McCaffrey on the Manning Cast a couple weeks ago was calling out plays before they happened and said that the Eagles ran such a vanilla scheme on both sides of the ball. Like, that's not even a red flag. That is a failure as an organization, and you should be ashamed of yourselves and relegated to the XFL.
No, the UFL now. They relegated the UFL now, baby.
Oh my god. At this point, give Florida State our playoff spot this year for
Ron DeSantis' ass.
Like, listen,
at least you have a playoff game, man. Like, that's what I've been telling you. At least you're going to see a playoff game.
Yeah, well, because I think, for you guys, you have to hope the Packers lose, right?
Which is not going to happen. We have to win. For the Seahawks, the Packers have to lose to the Bears, and we have to win.
Yeah. And
that ain't happening.
The one thing as I'm ripping on, casual fans about the Pro Bowl, I'm going to rip on them about this. So many of them, and listen, I've been pissed at Jalen Hurts before, but I'm an Eagles fan. I'm pissed at everybody. I hate the damn team. As much as I'm a fan, I hate my own team. There's no way you can look at that Cardinals game and think he was the problem when the dude had a 78% completion percentage for the game and had 3 passing touchdowns, and the only interception he threw was which basically didn't count because it was the last play of the game on a Hail Mary, which even the Hail Mary was disgusting. Because you know what's funny? The Eagles love to throw the ball down the field in random situations, right? Like, when we have like that play against the Seahawks, we're trying to draw pass interference for no reason. you know, you have that play, right? So these guys are used to going down the field because our passing plays take forever to develop because they're all running, you know, four verts. So you figure, okay, on a Hail Mary, this should be, you know, maybe the Eagles have a chance here because that's the only play they run down the field is four verts, just everybody go. And when the ball went up in the air, I'm like, okay, I know they're not going to catch it, but let me just see who's in the end zone. There was like six Cardinals in the end zone, maybe two Eagles. Where the hell is the rest of the team? Where's the rest of the team on the Hail Mary?
Where's the rest of the team?
Where did you guys go, bro? Like, who's in the end zone? Like, I saw that ball go up and I'm like, where's Julio? Where's A.J. Brown? Where's Devontae Smith? I'm like, where the hell are these guys? Like, are we running comebacks on the last play of the game? What is this? Like, why is nobody in the end zone? But like, there's so many issues I can talk about with the Eagles, but it's just, I see the same thing every week and I'm so tired every week and I can't, like, listen, at this point, like, if they win the playoff game against let's just assume they finish as the 5 seed. If they win the playoff game against Tampa or the Saints, whoever wins that division, like, I'd rather just lose the damn thing and just get it over with. Like, I don't want to have to see my team win and then get absolutely panned by the Niners, most likely the week after. I don't want to see that again. Like, oh, I'd almost rather just lose and get to the draft. Give me a better draft pick and call it a day.
So the Gridiron Heights thing came out this week, and they did the NFL Dread Zone, and it's Jalen Hurts doing a play, because they're, like, in a play, basically, like a, you know, like a stage play. And then the audience goes, and then Jalen Hurts like messes up a line, and the audience goes, "It's the same plays every week." best thing I saw this week was that.
Wasn't it like in the side thing? It's like, you know, it was like Jason Kelce like trying to help him out with the lines, but yeah. Jason Kelce's like, "We don't have any other plays here, Jalen."
We don't have, I don't know where your line is. Oh my God. Do you guys want to hear my fantasy team for my championship game as of Thursday night?
Well, you showed us, didn't you?
I did, yeah. But I figured it'd be fun to list it on the audience.
Oh yeah, they don't want to hear my fans, my loser fantasy teams.
My championship game roster as of today, because Josh Jacobs is questionable, Keenan Allen is questionable. So just bear that in mind. CJ Stroud is my starting quarterback. James Conner, Ezekiel Elliott, CeeDee Lamb, Jordan Addison, Tyler Kraft, which is the Packers tight end. Tajee Spears, the Titans second running back. I think it's their first running back this week. Raiders defense against Denver and Jake Elliott.
Jake Elliott about to make you bank this week.
I hope. But yeah, that's because ESPN default is play week 18. Thanks, ESPN. Thank you. Oh, Jesus. All right. So let's go to our post-credit scene. Since Brandon's here, let's do our movies of the year. We'll do our top five that we have seen, by the way. That's the caveat, movies that we have seen. Top five from 1 to 5 and our worst movie of the year. Shane, go ahead.
I didn't know we were supposed to prepare a top five.
You don't have to. You can do like a top three or whatever. That's fine.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you some of the ones I liked. I'll also do a couple that surprised me.
All right, go ahead. That's fine. This was like kind of off the cuff. Don't prepare it. That's fine. I'm totally cool with that.
So ones that I liked, I liked Mission Impossible because, as you know, I'm a big fan of that franchise.
Another amazing installment, I'll just say that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's my favorite in the franchise, but, you know, it's probably like my second or third favorite. I mean, it's you know, it's up there. It's good. You know, you'd think that one of these days they would lose steam, but apparently not. You know, every Tom Cruise, Christopher McQuarrie team up movie is just great. And there goes Brandon.
Oh no.
But you know, they have yet to miss, and I don't expect them to to start anytime soon. Another one I really liked was Godzilla Minus One.
Have not seen it. I need to. Godzilla Minus One. I have to see it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, definitely the best. Definitely the best Godzilla movie, I would say. It's really, I mean, without like spoiling anything, you know, I feel like it really demonstrates the humanity involved in situations like these. And also putting it in a historical time of, you know, like post-World War II, which was obviously a very rough time for Japan. It was really brilliant, I thought. And, you know, it's normally when you watch, you know, a Godzilla movie. Yeah, I mean, normally when you watch a Godzilla movie, you're like, oh yeah, he's gonna blow up the world or whatever, not the world, but you know, and you're like, yeah, really. But in this movie, you're like, oh no, please don't. Because you really see him for the monster he is. And it was cool. Another one that I really liked out of the MCU, Guardians 3.
Excellent film. Fantastic.
Yeah. I liked the first one. Wasn't huge on the second one. But this one was pretty good. I really thought it blended, you know, the emotional moments and kind of the heavy nature that is these characters, because they all have sort of tragic stories, if you really think about it. And, but also while still being fun and just being a good send off for all of them and for not James Cameron, James Gunn. really quickly,
before we continue on with your list, how do you guys grade the MCU this year? I've seen every MCU thing. I don't know how many stuff you guys have seen with the MCU this year.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah,
was good, but like other than that, nah.
I had it as a D. I really, yeah, Guardians 3 I forgot probably was excellent. Werewolf by Night I thought was excellent. Obviously Loki. I think Loki is incredible. I think look, it might not be everyone's taste. I get it. It's really multiversal heavy. I get it. But if you can like kind of let that be, I think it's fantastic. Loki season 2 I thought was fantastic. Aside from that, just a bunch of meh. I'd be real. Like it was, I thought Ant-Man 3 was terrible. I thought it was abysmal. I thought it was definitely one of the worst movies of the year, but it's not my worst. I thought the Marvels was fine, but ultimately nothing too special minus the post-credit scenes. That's kind of what Marvel's been. Like, I feel like this year it's like, this is fine. The post-credit scenes are important, but that's it, really. I kind of feel that with a lot of Marvel stuff this year. I feel like there's a few things that I think are important to watch this year, but other than that, just go through a lot of the post-credit scenes. That's kind of it. Yeah. Like, there's just nothing redeemable with a lot of it. And obviously, they're taking a break. They're just doing Deadpool 3. Thank God. Brandon, are you here? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on Marvel this year?
I'll be dead honest because I just I grew up a Marvel fan, like with obviously the original stuff, like, you know, as we all did, like Tobey, well, except for you, Rob, because you had to go back and watch it. But
yep, I started watching Marvel in 2020.
Yeah,
and I watched, you know, everything.
I grew up obviously a fan of Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, and Hulk from 2003, and if, you know, real ones know 2003 Hulk and that, how that's become like a cult classic among Marvel fans. But you know, when it came to like the newer era, like the MCU stuff, like as I got older, I didn't really care, you know, because superheroes to me were just a kid thing. Like as I got older, like I missed a bunch. I went back and watched a few of them here and there, but I missed a bunch. I haven't really kept up with MCU as much as I probably would like to, but I remember I saw like Endgame in theaters. I think that was the last one I saw in theaters, because after that, I feel like after Endgame or, you know, Infinity War, around that time period, like those kinds of movies, around there, it's when I just got bored with it, because it became the same movie over and over and over again. And it became, and not just the same movie, but it became like, I just didn't care for some of the characters. Like, I don't care for Ant-Man. I don't care for, you know, like my favorites growing up were the Hulk, Spider-Man. So if it's not anything like that, I really don't care for it. And then it's just like, and even if I find the story cool, I'm like, I know this because this is a Marvel movie or a Marvel show, whatever it is. I know exactly how it's going to go from start to finish. And then I know it's going to have a couple Easter eggs or whatever it is, post-credit scenes. And that's going to be it. And then we're going to move on to the next one. So it's like, they feel very cookie cutter. And they feel very just uninspired nowadays. And it seems like this year, like they've kind of just really bottomed out, well, this past year, I should say, because now we're in 24. But it just feels like they kind of bottomed out to me, where it's just like, it's really gone stale.
I think Echo in 2 days is going to be great. And that's part of my thing with Marvel too. I feel like this year they tried to get the kid market back, because it's Disney, and they want to do like kid-based shows. Like Ms. Marvel is a kid show, and the Marvels subsequently I think is more made for kids than you might think. But that being said, I love the fact that they're opening the year with Echo, TVMI. You got Vincent D'Onofrio, you got Daredevil, you got all these guys back. Now we know that it's canon to the Marvel show, so that's great. I gotta go back and watch them now and like actually properly watch them, but I will take the time to do that at some point. I just think Marvel needs more adult content, I'm gonna be honest, and I think they're gonna finally do that this year. So
Deadpool 3,
very excited for that. But Shane, continue on. So you said you finished with Guardians, and continue with the other ones you liked and ones you surprised you.
Did I have other ones that I said I liked? Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And then surprises. I had quite a few surprises this year. Things that that weren't really on my radar, but I was like, wow, that was actually a lot better than I thought it would be. Number one being Barbie. I thought that movie looked really stupid, but then I saw it and I was like, you know, that wasn't bad. I wouldn't say it's like one of my top movies of the year, but I liked it. Another one was the Super Mario's movie.
Yeah.
Thought that looked like hot garbage. I quite enjoyed it. Another one was John Wick 4. Sorry, Brandon, I'm not a fan of the John Wick movies. I think from an action standpoint, they are incredible. And choreography, you know, fight choreography and whatnot, but just, you know, they've never really had stories that have particularly interested me other than the first one. So I just, you know, for me, it just ends up being like 2 hours of mindless action, which for some people, that's great, but I don't know. I'm just not really into that. I thought this was a, you know, kind of a darker story that was had a little more to say, and yeah, I thought it was interesting. My biggest probably like the biggest movie that I haven't seen is Across the Spider-Verse because because I hate that animation style so much. And I know
okay, that's fair. That's fair.
It's fair. Because
I think it's
cool. I do, but it makes me so nauseous when I watch any of those movies. So I just like I can't do it.
And that is fair. That's completely fair.
I watched the first one though. Great movie. I just, you know, felt like crap afterwards.
Do you have a disappointment and like one that you really, really hated?
Yeah, so biggest disappointment was definitely Indiana Jones. I mean, I was not expecting that movie to be good to begin with, but I was like, maybe they can redeem themselves a little bit after Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and somehow they made something worse. Anyways, so, you know, should we just...
That's the worst way. It's the worst way to send Harrison Ford off as Indy, too.
I know. I mean, they, you know, they could have just stopped after three, but no, let's drag them back through it again.
I also want to mention this too. Speaking on that, Disney had the five worst box office. They held the top five of box office bombs this year.
Damn.
Everything was Disney. All five of the box office bombs were Disney. Continue, Shane.
Nice.
nice.
Yes.
And they lost Mickey Mouse. You know,
there really weren't a ton of movies this year that I just like absolutely hate. Oh, Meg 2. That was dog shit.
I mean, that was not supposed to be a good movie, really, when you think about
it. No. That's probably my worst. Okay, and then before I get to my best movie, I wanna do most overrated.
John Wick 4. No, I'm kidding.
You guys probably know what I'm gonna say here.
Oppenheimer.
God
damn it! It's so good!
No, it's not. It's so boring.
It's not your type of movie, Shane.
I know. That's the thing. I'm not a biopic guy.
But
especially with Oppenheimer, right? It's, you know, this is my problem with biopics is a lot of times it's about either stories that aren't worth being told, which I feel like this one is, because it's a pretty dramatic, intense thing. Or it's something that's such a well-known story. It's like, you know, Titanic, for instance, it ends with the ship sinking. Like, okay, yeah, we know that. I mean, what is it gonna, you know, and granted, that's not a biopic, that's a historical fiction, but you get my point. And it was the same thing with Oppenheimer. It's like, we all know that, yeah, the atomic bomb happened, and it went on to destroy many cities and kill lots of people. Like, yeah, we know.
But the point of it was the court case! Did you think it was boring?
Which is stupid.
Damn it!
Dude, it's a movie about building a bomb, which is...
That's the first half, and the second half is about Oppenheimer.
Yeah, so why are you going to take something as cool as building a bomb and then make an hour and a half long courtroom snooze fest?
You didn't think in that hour and a half Robert Downey Jr. had like one of his best performances since Iron Man? It was incredible!
Dude, this is his only performance since Iron Man. Other than Mr. Doolittle, but I mean, that was kind of not good. I mean, yeah, he was great in it. I just thought it was boring.
Oh my god, damn it.
And then later in the year, we had Godzilla Minus One as the sequel to Oppenheimer. So, you know.
Oh my god. Shane. Oh, damn it. Brandon, do you want me to do my first? Okay.
Hold on. I haven't told you my best movie though.
Okay, number one of the year. Oh boy.
And I told you guys this the other day. I said, I finally got it. I finally saw it.
What is it?
Iron Claw.
Haven't seen it yet. Really? I heard it's good.
That's your number. Yeah, I would have never guessed that's your number one.
It's a newer movie and it is a biopic, so
Oh my god, you're contradicting yourself already.
I know. I was going into it because my mom was saying, oh, I'm going to go see this with your aunt. Now, you know, you want to come? And I was like, in my head, I'm like, a biopic.
It's a sports movie, too.
But then I was like, but I should be a good son and nephew. All right, fine. Then I went, and I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Wow, I got to watch it now. That's your number one.
Because the thing about it is it's, like, yes, it's a biopic, but A, it's a lesser-known story. But it's also a story that, you know, it doesn't feel like a biopic because it's not like about this event. It's just, it's more of like, it's a very, of course, without spoiling anything, it's a very dramatic, you know, hence story about how, you know, families and more specifically like how parents can, you know, they can raise a child to want it to be this one way and then it kind of ruins a family dynamic. And it's really interesting. It's kind of like, it's almost like if this is going to sound weird, but like if Whiplash was a sports drama.
I like that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it sounds strange, but it's true. That's kind of what it felt like, but it's, in my opinion, it's even more like dramatic and intense than that. And you'll see why if you watch it, but it's also just shot really well. You know, it's a period piece. It takes place in the 80s, 70s, 80s. And you really can feel the setting. Like it definitely, it's not like it's just, you know, a lot of times in those movies that take place in the past, you're like, oh, it does? Oh, okay. But no, this like, it really does feel like the 80s or the 90s or whatever time, 70s, whatever it is. And Zac Efron, he is continuing to prove why he is an actor and not just a handsome guy. Which he is, but he's also, you know, there's so many stars in Hollywood where you're like, are they actually a good actor or are they just, you know, a star? And he always gets put in that conversation and it drives me crazy because he is an incredible actor. He just hasn't been given all the parts to necessarily show it. And in the last few years he has, and I love it. But everybody does great in this. I think he could and will be nominated for Best Actor, and I would imagine Jeremy Allen White will also be nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Yeah, and I'm sure it'll get some other nominations, at least I would hope. But yeah, really, really well done. I was not expecting to like it at all. just given the genre and, you know, my mom, her movie selection when we go to movies is generally terrible.
Really quickly, tell Brandon what movie you watched with your mom before the pandemic.
I think I told you this, didn't I, Brandon?
If you tell me the movie, I remember.
Her and my grandma were saying, oh, you should come to the movie with us. And I was like, no, this movie is bad, and it just looks bad from the trailers. Like, not even bad. It looks straight up awful. No, it'll be fun. It's a great play. The movie was Cats.
No.
We left half an hour into it, okay?
Half an hour in?
Yeah, which is like what most people did.
and I said, no,
We should see Jojo Rabbit instead.
Yeah, you did say that. Yeah, I remember that.
So then we snuck into Jojo Rabbit, and obviously it was fantastic. And I was like, yeah, you're welcome.
yeah, you're welcome.
So ever since that, you know, and then like since then, it's been, you know, the movies that she has picked. It's been like House of Gucci,
which I liked, by the way. I thought House of Gucci was good.
Biopic, you know. it was fine. But then, you know, I was like, oh, great. You know, I'm sure this will be another Tiffany Hansen snooze fest, but, that sounds so mean when I say it, but I say that in a loving Christian way. Iron Claw was fantastic. I would highly, it's very heavy, you know, so just bear that in mind, but it's really good. Really, really good.
Brandon, I think I'm actually going to go next. I think it ties in well with Shane's list. Number one, I'm going to go in order from 1 to 5. I actually have an honorable mention that I just thought about. I think it should be where it's placed. Number one is Oppenheimer. I don't understand how that movie's spectacular. I can't wait to watch it again.
You're like, also a Nolan fanboy, so I get it.
Yes. I freaking love Christopher Nolan. And by the way, just bear that in mind for all you people being like, he's a Nolan fanboy. I fucking love Tenet. Okay, nobody likes Tenet. I love Tenet. Tenet's my favorite movie ever made. I think it's brilliant. I love Tenet. I am going to die on that hill. I'll die on that hill by myself, and I'll go back in time with the turnstile and keep doing it. but it's inherently pretty damn long. I did feel like it should have been like four. I thought it was about 40 minutes too long on first watch. I definitely got to watch it again. Because there's a bunch of, like, Christopher Nolan nuances that I didn't catch. But that being said, I thought it was great. I thought casting was great. Robert Downey Jr., yeah, this is his best performance since Iron Man. I know that's, Doolittle, whatever. But genuinely, it might even be better than him as Iron Man. Although, I think that's a little facetious because him as Iron Man is the reason the MCU even exists. So that seems a little harsh. But I just loved
it. It was very well cast. I can say that for sure.
I know. I know Cillian Murphy might be quiet spoken, but damn, that dude's an amazing actor. Another just incredible performance by him as well. Perfectly cast as Oppenheimer. Yes, this movie's incredibly cast. Number two is Barbie, and the reason why it's at two is not because it's necessarily my one of my what. Barbenheimer. But except it's kind of flipped. It's Oppen Barbie, technically. Anyway.
disgusting sounding.
But the reason why it's at two. The reason why it's at two is not because it's necessarily my second favorite movie of the year. It's because how the fuck did that movie work? Shane, how the hell did we enjoy that movie? I saw it in theaters when it came out. I saw it with my mom 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Cause my mom was like, I want to watch Barbie. I'm like, okay, let's watch it. And I still loved it. I still thought it was incredible. I was like, how? This movie's silly. It's got Will Ferrell running after a Barbie. It's got Ryan Gosling being a weird Ken. It's got beach offs. Brandon, have you seen Barbie?
No. I don't watch that or Oppenheimer.
Dang it. Then you'll get some of the Barbie references. But like,
can skip one of them.
Damn it. Watch both.
I'm kidding. Watch both for sure.
I plan to. I was thinking about selecting my movie as Barbie. I was really debating it, just because it's such a, well, I'm not, obviously, we're doing book smart, But
by the way,
yeah, Booksmart is wonderful, and I can't wait to watch it again. It doesn't make sense. It's so stupid how that movie works. Greta Gerwig is going into my top five for directors because every movie she makes somehow freaking works. And I, like Little Women, I was thinking about Little Women a lot this year because it reminds me weirdly a lot about Barbie. I don't even get how Little Women works anymore. I just don't get how her movies work. I don't understand.
They're all such wildly, they're all so different. That's what's crazy to me.
Yeah, they're all like so different, but they work. So Barbie at two because they absolutely work to perfection. Number three is Across the Spider-Verse. That is the best. That is Across the Spider-Verse, objectively speaking. As much as I love No Way Home, as much as I love Spider-Man 2, as much as I even love TASM, The Amazing Spider-Man 1 I think is better than Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 1. That's a really hot take.
Hush your mouth.
I think it's
silence.
It's much better. Wait, do you agree or disagree, Shay?
I agree that TASM 1 is better than Tobey's 1.
Thank Tobey's you.
Spider-Man
1.
Oh yep. My God.
I'm sorry. Like, I think, really quick, Tobey's my favorite Spider-Man because he's the most nostalgic because I grew up with him, you know, and that was like, those were the movies that really got me into cinema. But now
TASM 1 is more accurate to the comics, isn't it? Basically the whole
kind of
yeah a little more, but now when I look back on all three of the Spider-Man that we live, at least live action Spider-Man we have, I think Tobey is definitely the weakest of the three, which
and number one
hurts
number
my, and it hurts by, my soul to say
and,
that
and by the way and by the way I know it's hard to compare it, but obviously No Way Home justified this for me. Andrew Garfield's far and away the best Spider-Man live-action Spider-Man we've seen. His movies are not great, but god damn, he's a good Spider-Man!
He's definitely the most talented actor of the three, if nothing else.
Oh, no, he's the most talented.
But, yeah, Across the Spider-Verse is great. There are some Venom references in there, in that movie, by the way, which are kind of fun. Like, live-action Venom, Tom Hardy's Venom. But, like, that's kind of more if you care about the dumb universe that is the SSU. Which, yeah, that universe is dumb.
Which nobody does.
am I one of the only people that generally cares about the SSU? Like, yes. Probably.
I think you are.
I watched Morbius, okay, and I hated it, but I did it. I sat through that whole damn movie, and it pissed me off to eternity. Probably more than the movie that's actually worse on my list this year. Anyway, number four is Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. I gotta rewatch this movie. It's great. I love how the movie's funny and playful and also really does a good job from what I've heard of like the source material of D&D, the game itself, is very much present in this movie. But they do a good job of, like, appealing to people who are fans of D&D and people like me who have never played D&D or know basically anything about D&D at all. But yet, I still absolutely love it. Number five is MI7. It's another great Mission Impossible installment, as Shane said. Number six, this was the number one movie for me at the beginning of the year. It fell off the list, I think. Just because I think the top five are really great. Air? I thought Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Air. I thought Air was really good. I thought it was going to finish in my top five. It's not going to finish in there, but I hope we get some Oscars for that movie. That movie's great. Shane, did you enjoy that movie?
No.
No? Shane,
I told you, didn't I?
You don't like biopics, so you didn't enjoy Air like at all.
I mean, I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy it at all. I'd give it like a C, probably.
My god, dang it.
Dude, it's a movie about a guy making a shoe. Who gives a shit? Like, I think, I'm sorry, but it's not... It's not like a... I mean, Dude, I already didn't care for a movie about a guy making a freaking bomb. Let alone a shoe.
Well, okay, wait, Shane, I have a question before I get to my worst movie of the year. What's your favorite biopic ever made? Do you have one?
See, probably I have to think, but first thing that comes to mind is probably Ford vs. Ferrari.
Oh, that movie's excellent.
But I mean, that's like, you know, that doesn't really feel like a biopic because it's like a racing movie. It's this event, you know, it's like, I don't know, but like, technically it is.
Yeah. That's fair. Probably, that's a good answer.
It's probably that one. Again, I'd have to think about it a bit more. You guys keep talking. Let me think about it.
My worst movie of the year is one that I saw for free. Yes, I didn't pay a single penny to see this movie in theaters. And it made more money in 2 weekends than Mission Impossible. Shane, can you guess the movie?
Made more money in 2 weekends than Mission Impossible?
Yep. Well, not in total, but in two like weekend segments, it made more money. It didn't actually make more money than MI7, but for two consecutive weekends, it made more money.
I don't know.
Think about it. The tickets were free. And some random people bought it for us off the internet through a pay it forward program.
Wait, what? I do not remember this.
It's on Amazon Prime right now. Nothing's coming to mind?
No.
This movie used to be a Disney movie, and then it got moved to Angel Studios. No? Nothing?
No.
Dang it! Sound of Freedom!
That's your least favorite, really.
Okay, let me explain why. I have a bunch of reasons why. First off,
I'm not judging, I'm just curious.
Listen, here's why. I have a bunch of reasons why. It's not the QAnon stuff, by the way. Just put that to the side. I have nothing to say about that because I don't know the history about that. I'm not saying that because of that. I'm talking about the movie in itself, okay? Can we just make that clear, please? Just talking about the film. Okay? Okay. Oh my god, I fucking hate this movie. I fucking hate it. So, something like Childhood Trafficking, right? I really am a sucker for movies that talk about really important things, right? Like, we watched Brokeback Mountain. It's a really great LGBTQ+ movie, right? Like, important things in our society, right? And I said, even as a straight male, I love this movie because it's great for a really important topic, right? That's what I said for that movie, right? So
a good story in general.
Yes. Sound of Freedom is talking about childhood trafficking. Really important thing. I have a big problem with, hey, you have a movie that you think is important because it's an important topic to discuss. But the movie is shit. If you do that, I think that's a sin. And yes, this movie is created by Angel Studios, which is a Christian studio. What you made was a sin there, my friend. In the sin bin. The editing was awful. The acting was kind of dumb. The wife of the police officer had nothing to do in the movie. He's just like, you must go. And she acts like a fucking god in the whole damn movie for two damn scenes. The editing is atrocious. That's the biggest thing. The editing is atrocious. If you watch this movie, the editing is flipping atrocious. My biggest problem with this movie is also not even the movie itself. So this movie had a really unique model because they were like, oh, this is a movie about human trafficking. Everyone needs to go and see it. Go and see it, whatever, right? So they did this thing called the Pay It Forward campaign, which I've never seen done before, which basically is you buy a ticket for yourself for however many people you want to go see in the theater, and you can buy a ticket for someone else for free, just a random human. You go on it's all done through the Angel Studios website. So when me and one of my friends decided, just as a meme, and everyone's talking about the movie and it made a lot of money and whatever, we just said, you know, screw it. We're going to go see this film. Like, whatever, right? It's a film. We can get to go for free. You know, what's the harm in that? Yeah, that was a terrible idea. We walked out of that regretting it horribly, even though we didn't pay a single dime. And part of the problem with the Pay It Forward campaign for a childhood endangerment movie or a childhood trafficking movie is that dumbass families, two rows in front of us, decided to take a whole row of six, seven-year-olds, to a movie about childhood trafficking. What is wrong with y'all? Good idea. What is wrong with y'all? You think that's a family movie night? Bro, I can't.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah, this is a great idea. The movie was atrocious. I have a big problem. When you're making a movie, again, I'm just talking about the film itself here, nothing else surrounding it. When you make a movie about something important, like really important in society, it better be good. The editing better be good. The storyline better be good. And this is a true story, actually. A good portion of it is based on a true story. Some of the scenes are actually based on true events. If you're going to make a movie like this, do it right, please. Do it right or don't even put it out at all. Unbelievably stupid. What the gall. The gall of this movie getting more money in two straight weekends than Mission Impossible. This movie made like $150 million in back-to-back weekends. The gall of that is bizarre. I still can't believe it. That movie made a ton of money for absolutely no reason. The worst movie of the year in 2023 for me is Sound of Freedom. Brandon, what are your picks for best movies of the year and your worst?
So I hate to be the one that goes last because I did not watch that many movies this year that came out this year. I don't know why I didn't. It's just I think this year for movies it's just not a ton of them really interested me enough to want to go to the movies and watch it. But I was able to come up with three of my favorites, not five, but three. Because I know I think I said I didn't watch a ton. I came up with my worst. And then I came up with my biggest disappointment. And then of course the movies I wanted to watch. So I'll start with the biggest disappointment is the one I'll save for last. But so my top three. Well, you guys know my one, so I'm gonna skip one for now. I'll come back to one in a second. My number two, and it's, listen, I know people hate it. I know people don't like it. I know people are tired of it. I know people want it to end already. But this is my list, and this is what I love to watch every time it comes out, and I would be the first one buying a ticket on opening weekend every single year, whenever it drops. I'm a Fast and Furious fan. I love Fast 10.
Really? Okay.
So, I mean, I you know, when you've been so invested in the story over the course of its run, and you've seen the characters grow. I mean, listen, the story is wild and it's overblown and all that stuff. I get it. But when you've grown with the franchise and it's been a big part of your childhood, when you've grown with it, I mean, when Universal was promoting Fast and Furious 4 back in 2009, when the series was still really good, I was on vacation down there and I actually was one of the youngest people at that Universal event. Cause I was just walking through the park, but it had a big event where everybody gathered around. They turned one of the streets in the Universal Studios, set there, pretty much the whole, all those streets. They turned the one street into a basically like what you would see in Fast and Furious. So they turned it into a quarter mile, almost like a little mini car show. And and they had trivia and stuff like that. And I actually got one of the trivia questions right, and everybody was shocked because how the hell does a 9-year-old know about Fast and Furious? So I've been following the series since I was even younger than that. I've been following the series since I was probably 7 or 8, or right before Fast 4 came out. So I've been a fan for that long. I've been a fan for basically 15 plus years of the series. So anytime it comes out, I mean, this one too, you know, I love the Fast movies because they have humor. They have the over-top action. They are a great popcorn flick. They're a great summer blockbuster. If you want to just have fun, they're fun. Like, yeah. don't pay any attention to, you know, the wild story that it is or just the implausibility of it. It's like, it's just fun. Let it happen. Let it wash.
Let it wash over you.
It's meant to be a popcorn and soda flick. Like, you're going to love it while you're there, but it's going to feel like crap in your stomach when you're done with it. For most people, for me, I enjoy it like it's the biggest sweet tooth problem in American history. I love Fast 10. I love all the Fast movies. So Fast 10 was my second. Number three for me, and because I wanted to watch it, and because it fits who he is as a person, so as a character, this was right up his alley, and he killed it. Many people might disagree, but he killed it, was Nicolas Cage in Renfield.
That's number three. Is that number three for you?
That's my number three.
All right. I don't mind it, because it's a Nick Cage flick.
So, because Nick Cage, obviously, you know, he'll do a whole bunch of parts. He's even done, five movies this year anyway.
Yeah, which has basically just all been him doing popcorn flicks.
But this one, I think, was the best of the bunch. And I think this one, because this one just plays into the goofiness of who he is. So he is a funny ass Dracula while still being scary, while still, you know, still having a creepy face, because, you know, he does have good facial expressions. I mean, you know, the comedy in it was funny. The horror in it was for a comedy horror movie, the horror wasn't too cheesy, which I like. Like, I hate when horror comedies go too cheesy. It still had some good horror elements to it. You know, the only part about it I didn't like, and why I didn't put it over Fast, 10, not just because, A, I'm a fan of the Fast series, but I just don't like Awkwafina at all.
Rip. She's from Queens.
Yeah, I don't like her. I find her annoying. I know she's, you know, she's funny to some people, but to me, I just find her annoying. I don't like, listen, I know she's from Queens. I know that a lot of New Yorkers have that pride just like we do in Jersey, but, you know, like, she comes off as fake to me. I don't like her.
I think it's fair though.
Yeah, like, you know, like, it's almost like she's from New York, yes, but it feels like she tries too hard to always put on a New York, like, accent. It's like, you're from New York. We know how you speak. Just be yourself. It feels like she tries too hard. And that's why I don't like her. I'm like, you don't have to try so hard. Just be who you are. But that movie in general, between Nicolas Cage and between, what is his name? Nicholas Holt? Hoyt, whatever his name is. I forget his name. But, you know, he was great in it. You know, obviously playing the character of Renfield. You know, it, like, I loved it. It was fun. That's a real popcorn movie. That's a good one you can just sit down and watch, and it's just fun. The kills are great. The action's great. The comedy is pretty good, you know, so there's all that, you know, and there's obviously romantic undertones without it being, you know, overly, like, sexual or romantic, so, which, you know, it's nice. So that's my number three. The worst, and this is going on a lot of people's worst list, and I don't think we really talked about it. I don't think either of you talked about it from what I remember. I mean, I know we've been talking for a while now, but it's The Flash.
It's the worst?
Yes.
How? What? I have it in my top 10. I liked it a lot.
What? The only thing that stops me from calling it probably my least favorite movie ever is the fact that it has a storyline that I can relate to, losing a parent. And that
we talked about it when it came out, and you said you liked it.
Liked it, but compared to other movies, not as much. So it's still, it's still near the bottom half of the movies that I've seen in the past few years. But it's the worst one of this year. Before I went back and I watched a few other movies and things like that. So I kind of, it obviously went down to the bottom after I watched a few other things.
That's fair.
But, you know, I liked it at the time. But remember, first reactions were not everything. So the first reaction, I liked it. And then the more I kind of went back and remembered it and watched watched certain scenes of it and kind of watched bits and pieces, I'm like, wow, this really wasn't that well done. I liked it because of two things at the time. And that's the personal relatability of it, of the story, obviously. And then obviously because it was the first movie I ever watched as a kid on a VHS tape, Batman 89. So having Michael Keaton as Batman is one of my favorite things ever. So, you know, those two things were cool. And the way they introduced him was really cool and it was funny. And of course the Let's Get Nuts line. Just man, the CGI is so bad. And the whole thing with Ezra Miller
It certainly hurts the movie. I'm not saying it didn't when I watched it.
I think outside of Michael Keaton, the acting could have been better just in general, not even just with that. The acting could have been better. It wasn't great. It feels kind of lifeless to me. It didn't feel like it hit hard enough like it should have. And then on top of the cheesy, really bad CGI, it really made a mess of itself. And the only thing that really saved it was just the kind of the last 15 minutes to a half hour of the emotional aspect of it. And then just Michael Keaton being Michael Keaton. So that's why it's the worst. And then my biggest disappointment, and I had high hopes going into this because of who directed it and who was in it and their history together. I shouldn't say history, it's really one movie, but still that one movie was fantastic. But the history between Ridley Scott and Joaquin Phoenix, and my biggest disappointment is Napoleon. I love, you know, as much as in history, you know, I didn't pay attention to history class a lot when I was in school. But I loved learning about great military leaders. I loved learning about, you know, especially the ones that were basically tragic heroes or, you know, even died as a, you know, you live long enough to see yourself become a villain. Some of these guys became villains towards the end of their lives, you know. And when I heard about Napoleon coming out, when I saw the trailers, especially during the football season, I was like, I want to see this. I love Ridley Scott as a director. I love Joaquin Phoenix as an actor. I love what they did together in Gladiator. That movie is beautiful from start to finish. I could watch Gladiator 1,000 times over and never get tired of it. So I was like, you know what? I want to see this. But it was just, the pacing of it was weird. There was a lot of historical inaccuracies in the movie, especially Napoleon's not that hard to kind of follow by the book of his life.
Yeah, it's pretty well documented.
And the fact that they got a lot of stuff wrong in it kind of pissed me off. The fact that Joaquin, but then they, like, the acting is great, don't get me wrong, but between the historical inaccuracies and the awkward pacing of it to me and the tone by the end of it being really, really, not even just dark, just creepy and dark, that was off-putting. Also, I mean, they did it tastefully in Gladiator when they, this is going to sound weird, but you guys, if you watch Gladiator, you understand what I'm saying when I say this. You know, they had the hints of incest in Gladiator, Like, you know, like those things, like, but they didn't make it like creepy, like where you were just openly seeing that stuff happen. Whereas with Napoleon, like, there didn't need to be like 3 sex scenes. You didn't need that. That was a little bit unnecessary. You know, but, you know, just, I love Joaquin Phoenix. He was great in it. The good things about it were, was him. And the fight scenes were good that he was in, but when he was away from the fight scenes, when his soldiers were fighting, it was very sloppy. It felt very rushed. You could definitely tell it was heavily edited. But whenever he was on the battlefield, it was great. Any scene he was in was great because Joaquin Phoenix is great. But just between the weird pacing, editing, the sex scenes, and just because it was the big, like, it was really shown on TV a lot during this football season, and it was really hyped up, like, every weekend I saw it on TV, and they were showing the commercial, like, 3-4 times during a game. So it was like they were really pushing it, so for it to be what it was, kind of was real disappointing. So that's my biggest disappointment. But that was it. And then the movies I wanted to watch, because you guys watched a lot of the ones I wanted to watch, I just never got around to them. I will eventually, but, so the obvious ones, well, the 2 obvious ones, actually. Everybody knows it. I wanted to watch Oppenheimer. Never got around to it. My friends went to watch it, but I had to work that night. Otherwise, I would have went with them and watched it. It was a Friday night that they went. I had to work. So I just missed out on seeing it.
Really?
Yeah. So I wanted to watch that. Of course, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. I'm a big Mission Impossible fan. It's one of my favorite movie series ever. You know, I watched what was it, Ghost Protocol when it came out. I'm a fan of that series. I've watched the other ones. You know, I really wanted to watch this one. I'm pissed I didn't get a chance to, but I was holding out for Oppenheimer, especially about it being out the same exact time. And when my friends went to see Oppenheimer and I couldn't go because they told me too late and I couldn't get out of work, I was pissed. And then I kind of just forgot all about Mission Impossible because I was so focused on Oppenheimer, and it just fell apart. So I didn't get a chance to watch either of those. I want to. I still will. I can get them. So I'll definitely do that this year. I'll watch those. But the other 3 are kind of ones that nobody really talked about, and I feel like they should. Well, I shouldn't have not talked about it because it's gaining more steam now as it's kind of had time to settle. And that's Killers of the Flower Moon. I wanted to watch that.
Really interesting. Really interesting movie. I really have a lot of thoughts on that.
I really, really wanted to watch it. You know, once again, it's another historical kind of movie. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, I could watch him lick paint off a wall and I still think it's a great movie. I could watch DiCaprio do anything. Doesn't matter what the hell it is. The only movie I can't watch him in, this is such a scorching hot take, but The Revenant. I can't watch him in that. I don't like it.
Damn!
Yeah. Don't like it.
Damn!
I think that's his best movie.
Damn!
Yeah, I can't. I don't like it. I think his best movie, believe it or not, and this is also me being part of also, you know, being a crime and action and drama kind of fan, is The Departed. So,
I mean, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, but I still want to watch Killers of the Flower Moon. I know it's had, you know, it's had great reviews. I really want to watch. I wanted to watch it when it came out. My grandfather wanted to watch it when it came out. We never got around to it because also Napoleon was coming around the corner and we wanted to watch that instead. So me and him watched it. Should have chose Killers of the Flower Moon. That was a mistake. So definitely that one. And then the other 2 nobody talked about. But I love this series, and it features one of my favorite actors as a leading man of the series, and that's Denzel Washington, because he doesn't do series, but this one he did, and I want to see Equalizer 3.
Oh, yeah.
Because I heard it was the best of the series, and not just the best of the series, I heard it was one of the best action movies of the year.
Yeah, I haven't seen the first 2, so I got to see the first 2 before I worried about.
The first two, I watched it in theaters. They were fantastic, phenomenal. You know, critics had, you know, iffy reviews because, you know, now everybody's a big, you know, Fuqua fan, and I, and you know, of course, Denzel Washington doing that, you know, nobody thought he was going to make a sequel, because he doesn't do that kind of stuff. But Equalizer 3, I was surprised that it actually fared better than the first two. The first two had mixed reviews. This one had a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. The other two had like 40 and like, I think 50. So this one completely blew it out of the water, apparently.
It's definitely my favorite of the three.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. And the thing that sucks is that I wanted to absolutely watch this one. I just never got around it once. Another, just again, the second half of the year, I just never got around to watching. But first half of the year, I watched Fast X. I watched John Wick. I had more time. And then once football season came around and once the weather got kind of cooler and I was like, I can't make it to all these movies. So I was just like, I have to just skip them and just, you know, wait till I get around to them. So I missed a lot of my favorite movies and favorite actors, but that's what happens. So, but The Equalizer 3 is still definitely one I need to watch it. I watched the first two. I don't want to miss it. So gotta watch it. Love Denzel Washington as an actor. Training Day is my favorite movie.
Oh yeah.
You know, but there's so many others you could pick. And then actually my last one of ones I wanted to watch, and nobody really knows about it. But to me, he's a very underrated actor, and the movie itself had great reviews, and it's another action movie. So I'm an action guy. It's what I do. I am a Michael Fassbender fan, and I heard The Killer was fantastic. So, nobody talked about it. I mean, nobody really, I mean, I think it had a limited release. And I think that's probably why, but everybody said it, like everybody that has, you know, at least professional, like reviews of it are great. Listen, Rotten Tomatoes is not a good, credible source, but 85% of Rotten Tomatoes, it had to do something right. So, and Michael Fassbender, to me, everything he does, I love it. I loved him, in the new Alien movie, Alien Covenant. When that came out, I watched him in that. Obviously the X-Men stuff. It's fantastic. At least to me. You know, all that good stuff. So anything he does, I will watch. I think with him, it's also weird because I have a story with one of his movies, and that is the fact that the last movie I saw with my father in theaters, and my dad and I loved going to movies when I was a kid, and obviously I would still be doing that today if it wasn't for what happened, but the last movie I saw was Assassin's Creed.
Do you like Assassin's Creed?
No. But I just have that fond memory of it.
Yeah, that's good. You know? That's good.
Yeah.
You know, because it's tied to one of the last memories of me and my dad. So, you know, it's funny enough, my dad actually fell asleep during the middle of it. So I'm sitting there watching it. I'm like, I'm not going to lie, it disappointed the hell out of me, Assassin's Creed, because you're going to make a game, a movie about a video game like that. And it almost had nothing to do with the video game.
Wait, it doesn't?
Not really.
What?
Not really. No, it had nothing. It had almost, like, maybe, what, how long was the goddamn movie? Hold on, wait a minute. The movie was...
It wasn't even long.
It was almost 2 hours. It was about an hour 45, hour, no, more than that. Hour 50.
Yeah, something like that.
But my God, I would say out of that hour 50, it had maybe 10 minutes of actual video game reference material, and the rest of it was just some sort of weird sci-fi flick.
What?
Sci-fi action flick. Yeah. It had nothing to do with Assassin's Creed.
And they think they wanted to make it, and they wanted to make a sequel of that movie.
Oh my God. Here we go. And here's the Wikipedia of it. It generally received negative reviews from critics that are primarily aimed towards the plot and writing, though some considered it an improvement over previous video game film adaptations. Yeah, because most of them before that probably sucked. Assassin's Creed was terrible. Like, Assassin's Creed was awful. But yeah, but Michael Fassbender and that movie with The Killer, I heard it was great this year. I'm gonna find a way to watch it. I could probably find some sort of, you know, third party stream, you know, wink wink.
Wink, but
But, yeah, because I think it's on Netflix or something like that, and I don't have Netflix. I want to watch it. I heard it was good. It's a hitman story. I love anything with a hitman, as long, like Liam Neeson's stuff, everything he does with like being a hitman. I'll watch it. But Michael Fassbender, right. I'll watch anything he does. Michael Fassbender is very talented, so I'll watch The Killer when I get a chance to. But yeah, that's my list of the movies. And even though I didn't watch as many as you guys, I still broke down a lot of my favorites. But my number one, you guys know this because I told you I'd come back to it. John Wick 4. Fantastic. Keanu Reeves, the series has revived his career. It's made him more money than he's probably ever had in his career outside of The Matrix. He's phenomenal in it. His acting's phenomenal in it. The action's phenomenal in it. The story, I mean, listen, here's the thing too, if you want to watch it, because Rob, I know you have to keep up with it.
I have to watch the first three. I'm not going to just watch four without watching the first three.
You have to, because it goes in order. The story kind of follows in order.
Yeah.
But I will say out of the four movies, it's a tale of two halves. The first two, the story is not great. The second two, they really kind of flesh it out more and make it more of a universe. More than the first two are not really a universe. Like the first two, they feel like it's just a regular action, hitman kind of movie. But the last two, three and four, really make it feel like it's a universe. So.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a John Wick spinoff TV show, so it makes sense.
Yeah, they have Ballerina coming out with Ana de Armas too. So that's going to be interesting. Apparently Keanu Reeves is going to be in it also. So, they also have the TV show, The Continental. I am a bit, and I want to visit The Continental in real life. It's in New York City, I believe. So, I do want to see it. I know it's there. But John Wick 4, I love anything Keanu Reeves related. I love him as an actor. And then when John Wick came out, the first one, I didn't think anything of it. And then when I heard it popped off, I went back and watched it, I think a year after it came out. I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. And then 2 came out, watched that in theaters. I watched 3 in theaters and I watched 4 in theaters, and I will be watching 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, however many they make. I don't care.
Didn't you get a popcorn?
Oh yeah.
John Wick 4 popcorn cup.
I got the collector's item. I got the collector's item because I went to go see it with my mom the day it came out. It was a Friday and I had off from work. So I went to see it the day it came out. And, I have the official coins from the movie. Cause remember in the movie, they trade coins, as kind of forms of currency. So I have the coins. Each one has like a shield on it. One has Keanu Reeves' face as John Wick. One has, the actual coins that they trade with the high table coins. And one has basically coins that you would see them trade each other in the Continental, in the hotels. And then to come with that, you can't eat popcorn out of it. It's not meant to be that. It's just collector's item. It's the popcorn bucket that comes with it. And it has like an animated Keanu Reeves on it. Really cool looking. It's all in like red and black. The two sides of it say John Wick. The other one says, it's a high table thing. It says, we seek the truth and we endure the consequences. So it's a really cool thing. I got that as a collector's item. That's been in my room since March. So it's going to be a year. It's crazy to think that movie came out in March of last year. And I feel like I just saw it with my mom. And here we are 10 months later. So 2 more months from now, and it'll be literally a year since that movie came out. So, I loved it. That was my favorite of the year. It's never going to change. That 2023 was the year of John Wick 4. but that's it for me. I can talk about that movie all day long. We'll both be here another 10 hours. So
yeah. That's it for our movies of the year. Speaking of Assassin's Creed, I am currently in the process of playing through AC1. I'm going to actually restart because I played it and then I got my Xbox One and then I got my Series X, but you can play it on Series X, the 360 version. So I'm going to
play the games. Don't watch the movie. Play the games. Yeah. Don't watch the movie.
Yeah. So when I played AC1, I was like, this is kind of boring, but I'm going to give it a second shot. I'm going to actually take time and play it because I know it's a great game. It's just a lot of kind of doing the same thing. But I think once I get the routine of it, I'll love it, especially at 1080p, 60fps on Series X, which is pretty cool. Thank you, Shane. Thank you, Brandon. And we will see you guys on Sunday night for our season finale, quote unquote. And then we'll reveal our playoff schedule, as well for when we're recording and uploading. Thank you guys for a great time as always.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. We'll see you Sunday. Sounds good, everybody.